Today we're going to discuss two leaders in the early Second Temple period, Ezra and Nehemiah. Ezra was a Kohen, he was a Sofer. He assumed the role of the religious leader of the Jewish community in Yerushalayim, and he was involved in the proclamation of instruction in the Torah. Now scholars debate the dating of Ezra, when did he come? And there's a debate as to between basically the majority view of Chazal and secular historians. Were there only four kings of the Persian Empire? Were there more than that, significantly more? Did it last for only 52 years or perhaps around 200 years? So for purposes of our class, we're going to follow the secular historian's view, which asserts that the first base of Minish is destroyed in 586 BCE. The second base of Minish is built in 516 BCE. Achashverosh from the Purim story is Chashirash, Ches Shin Reishin, which is Cheshayarsha, which according to Das Mikra and also other scholars is another name for Xerxes, who ruled from 486 to 465 BCE. The king following Ahasuerus, or the king following Xerxes, was Artaxerxes number one, in Hebrew, Artaxashta. And in Sefer Ezra, Perek Zayin Pasuk Aleph, we are told that Ezra ascended and made Aliyah during the reign of Artaxasta, and in Pasuk Ches of Perek Zayin, we are told, "Vayavo Yerushalayim b'chodesh hachamishi hishnas hashvis lamelech." So Ezra comes to Yerushalayim during the fifth month, which is the seventh year of the reign of Artaxasta. And if that's the case, so then he arrives around 458 BCE, which is approximately 60 years after the second base of Migdash is built. And he carries with him official Persian authorization, empowering him to appoint judges and to judge in accordance with the Torah. And he's described in Perek Zayin of Ezra that he is Ezra ben Seraya ben Azariah ben Chilkiah ben Shalom ben Sadok ben Achitu ben Amariah ben Azariah ben Meroyos ben Zerachiah ben Uzi ben Buki ben Avishua ben Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen HaRosh. So he has 17 generations going back to Aaron Kohen Gadol. So he comes with an aura of authenticity. And as mentioned a few minutes ago in Pasuk Yud, we read, Ki Ezra heichin levavo lidrosh es Torah Hashem v'lasos lamed b'Yisrael chok mishpat. His goal is to expound the Torah of God, to investigate the Torah Hashem, to teach its statutes and judgments in Israel. Ezra, in effect, was the Gadol Hador, the religious leader of the generation, whose intent was to spread Torah to the masses. And again, he is called a Sofer. Sofrim were teachers who expounded the Torah. They expounded the duplication of words in psukim and verses. They explained apparent contradictions. They were able to define ordinances in the Torah and provide biblical support for Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law that was passed down. So, for example, the prohibition of intermarriage in the Torah is explicitly limited to the seven Canaanite nations and the Ammonim and the Moavim. But other nations were also excluded from the nation of Israel by Ezra. Ezra is viewed as a contemporary Moshe Rabbeinu. Chazal emphasized this point that the Gemara, for example, in Sanhedrin, Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Beis states, Rabbi Yossi Omer Roy, Haya Ezra Shetinasin Torah Al Yadol Yisrael. It would have been fitting for Ezra that the Torah would be given by him to Klal Yisrael. Ilmolei Kidma Moshe. Had Moshe not done it first, Ezra would have done it. But Moshe Omer, Umosha Allah El Holokim, but Ezra Hu Omer, Hu Ezra Alami Bavel. We compare Moshe's Aliyah, he went up to God, as it were, and to the mountain to receive the Torah. In Ezra, we find the same language of Allah mi Bavel. He ascended to Bavel, from Bavel. Ma aliyah hamur kan Torah, af aliyah hamur lahalan Torah. Both aliyot involve Torah. The point being that the Gemara emphasizes that the greatness of Ezra really are close to being You know, he's compared to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe enacted the public reading of the Torah on Shabbos and Yom Tov, and the Gemara in Bava Kama, Daf Pei Beis Amud Aleph, states that among Ezra's takanos was that he enacted the public reading of the Torah also on Mondays and Thursdays and Shabbos afternoons. In Ezra, in Sefer Ezra, there are references to the Bnei HaGolah, the Kahal HaGolah, and to Am Haaretz. The Bnei HaGolah are the returnees from Bavel, those who were exiled to Bavel and who returned with the rebuilding, or shortly before the rebuilding, or shortly after the rebuilding of the second base of Migdash. The Amei Haaretz included those who had not gone into exile, even after Gedaliahu was killed following the destruction of the first base of Migdash. Most fled or were exiled, but there were still some who remained, and they were the Am Haaretz. And also, there were new adherents to the religious practices of the Jews, perhaps some other locals who had come. So they are the Am Haaretz. Now, Ezra essentially comes into Eretz Yisrael, and he is told in Perek Tes of Ezra that there's a lot of intermarriage going on. And Ezra says when he hears this, he ripped his garments. This is in Perek Tes, Pasuk Gimel. He ripped his garments, he ripped his hair, and he just sat silent for hours and hours during the day. He is absolutely devastated. Eventually, and he prays to God, and then he attempts to convince the population, which included a large section of nobles and leading priests, leading Kohanim, to divorce the foreign wives. And then the Sefer tells us that on the 20th, in Perek Yud of Sefer Ezra, that on the 20th day of Kislev, in the winter of 458 BCE, Ezra demands they separate from their foreign wives. And then the Perek describes how many families actually went along with this, and they did divorce their wives. But it doesn't seem that he was completely successful. The Sefer records 113 marriages that dissolve, which seems to be a minuscule percentage of the total number of families in Judea, roughly 50,000. And he says that the transgression was an ashma gedolah, a great transgression. So 113 families. Again, there were about 50,000 families in Judea. Doesn't know how many intermarried, but he said it was a significant problem. 113 sent away their foreign wives. And again, Nehemiah, when he comes a little bit late, a number of years later, there still is a problem. So not so clear how successful Ezra was. In any case, the Jews are encouraged to fortify the city, but the Sumerian officials, again, the Shomronim, those were those who lived in the north, and they wanted to be part of the group that returned from Bavel, but the group that returned from Bavel did not feel that those from the north were authentic. I remember from a previous lecture that the Shomronim, the Sumerians, were those who were part of a population exchange when the northern kingdom was exiled 140 years before the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. So some foreigners came to the land, and they served God in some form, but the returnees from Bavel did not want to have to do anything with them. So therefore, the Samaritans, the Sumerians, they're telling the king that the Jews are rebelling against the king, and if they fortify the city, they won't pay taxes. So the king orders the Samaritan officials to proceed to Yerushalayim and to halt the fortifications. Now, word of this reaches Nehemiah in Bavel, so he goes down to Jerusalem and takes action. And Nehemiah appears the Navi tells us, or the Sefer tells us, Nehemiah Perek Beis, Pasuk Aleph, Vayhi Bachodesh Nisan Shnas Esrim La Tarshachta HaMelech, Yayin Lafanav. So we are told that in the 20th year of the reign of Artaxasta, so Ezra appears in year 7, now we're in year 20, so that's 13 years later, that's around 445 BCE. He is the cupbearer of the king. We are told that he places the king in front of, the places wine in front of the king. The king says, what's wrong? And he says, if it pleases the king, my people in Eretz Yisrael, things are not going well. And there's a lot of language in Sefer Nehemiah, which seemed to mirror the language of Sefer Esther, that just like Esther flatters King Ahasuerus, Nehemiah flatters King Artaxasta. Artaxasta sends Nehemiah, says, you can go, you have to return, but you can go to Yerushalayim to help build the walls with my permission. And he also sends them with volunteer teams to rebuild the walls. And the adversaries constantly cause him problems. We read about Sanballat, the governor of the Shomronim, of the Samaritans. We read about Tobia, from Ammon, who was a representative of the most influential landowning family in Ammon. This family was to become the most prominent in Yerushalayim about two centuries after Nehemiah. And there are some other adversaries of Nehemiah that are mentioned in Sefer Nehemiah, in Perek Dalet, Perek Gimel, Perek Dalet. And this policy of exclusion initiated by Zerubbabel, who first comes to Eretz Yisrael from Babel, after Koresh, after Cyrus allows them to return in 538 BCE, and was continued by Ezra when he comes about 60 years after the building of the second base of Migdash, is continued by Nehemiah. In other words, he did not believe that the Samaritans, the locals, are part of the Jewish religion. There is the ones who are pure, as it were, who did not intermarry, and the ones who are the real adherents to the faith are those who returned from Babel. But anyone who was in Eretz Yisrael during the Galus, that these returnees do not want to have anything to do with them. So the difference between Nehemiah and Ezra is that Ezra is a scholar but a political novice, whereas Nehemiah is a highly experienced individual in matters of state. He is highly aggressive, and he uses highly aggressive tactics to ensure success. He swiftly moves to repair the breaches of the city wall. He establishes guard duty to ensure that the locals do not destroy it. He has the people who are building a wall. They would be having a building implements in one hand and a sword on the other hand, just to protect the work at night, so no one would destroy the fortifications. Additionally, we find in Perek Hei of Sefer Nehemiah that there were also social reforms that were necessary in the city because of the great financial disparity between the higher officials and priestly families on the one hand and the peasants and small landowners on the other hand. There was a major gap in terms of the economics. And in Nehemiah Perek Hei describes Vatitza Kasa Om Nishem Gdola Lachem HaYudim. There's a great cry from the people, and they cannot manage, and they're saying that they have to sell their children into slavery because they can't pay the debts to the wealthy landowners. And Nehemiah, in response to this, cancels all the debts, and he restores all the field to the original owners. And he did so by convening a great assembly in Yerushalayim, where the richer segments of the population were in the minority. By verbal persuasion and by relying on the will of the people and his own authority, he was able to proclaim the above-mentioned reforms. The nobles had to swear publicly before the assembly that the reforms would be implemented immediately. And again, and other things that he did, he also enlarged Jerusalem's population by an order requiring 10% of the populace to settle there. He also provided for regular payment of the tithe as a solid economic basis for the Beis HaMikdash and the city. What happened was, before Nehemiah came around, was that a few families who were Kohanim had gained control of the treasury, and they were in charge of the gifts of the agricultural produce that were brought to Yerushalayim. But Nehemiah made sure that the Levium were also taken care of. And then we read in Perek Ches how the people called upon Ezra to publicly read from the Sefer Torah Moshe Aser Tziva Hashem Es Yisrael. So there's a major gathering. And this ceremony begins at sunrise on Rosh Hashanah. And we read how Ezra reads the whole Torah with everyone gathering. And the people, when they hear what the Torah has to say, they're crying and they're so distraught by how they feel they failed to serve God. But Ezra turns to them and he says in Pasuk Yud, Vayomer, and Nehemiah also says this in Pasuk Tes, Pasuk Yud, Al tisablu v'al tivku, do not mourn, do not cry. Ki bochim kolam kishavim es divrei Torah. Everyone's crying when they hear the words of the Torah. Vayomer lahem, lechu ichlu mashmanim shtu mamtakim. Go eat, go drink, v'shichol manos, send gifts to each other. Ki kadosh ayom la'adonai, today's a holy day, al tiatzu, don't be sad. Ki chedvas Hashem himo uschem, because this is, don't worry, that you can rejoice in God, everything is good. And again, by the way, these psukim are actually used regarding the following question of whether we are allowed to fast on Rosh Hashanah or not. These psukim are used by some Rishonim to understand that on Rosh Hashanah we shouldn't fast a day of celebration, as Ezra and Nehemiah told the people, because he wanted to restore the joy of this festival season. The parak continues and describes how the Jewish people all celebrate the holiday of Sukkot. And the Torah was read daily throughout the holiday on the 24th day of Tishrei. There was a solemn agreement to accept the covenant of God. And again, once again, the central point of the covenant was separating from the people of the land. So we see that intermarriage was a problem again. There was still a problem. There were other items that Nehemiah dealt with, such as the obligations of the people to the Beis HaMikdash and a tax for the Beis HaMikdash of one-third shekel, the strict observance of the Shabbos. Nehemiah, we read about how Nehemiah saw that people were violating the Shabbos. So in Perek Yigimel Pasuk Yotes, he describes about how he has to close the shops for Shabbos, how he has to chase out the merchants who were selling their wares for Shabbos. So Nehemiah was very effective in implementing Jewish rule as governor, as he came with the authority of the king, our Tachshasta, to sort of, you know, set the tone for how the Jews should behave even after they were very lax. And if we were to compare Ezra and Nehemiah, two early leaders during the Second Temple period, they were two different types of leaders. Ezra was a spiritual leader, and Nehemiah was a religious political leader. In other words, Ezra was a Gadol Hador, and Nehemiah was a frum, a very religious politician. Ezra's mission was to spread Torah to the masses and to stop intermarriage. Nehemiah's mission was to rebuild the walls of Yerushalayim and to implement social reforms, such as canceling debts, supporting the Levium. And Nehemiah was opposed by powerful Samaritan leaders, but their opposition did not stop him from his mission. And the difference, let's say, between Ezra and Nehemiah is that when Ezra is told about intermarriage, he cries out and he fasts. Nehemiah, on the other hand, when he does this, so in Perek Yigimel, we are told about how he flogs the perpetrators, and he's much more authoritarian, and Ezra doesn't use force against anyone. Nehemiah has no problem. He's more of an authoritarian. The difference, perhaps, between Nehemiah and Ezra is that Nehemiah asserted his authority from the king, and therefore he's not afraid to take much tougher stands against those who are not doing what they should be doing. Whereas Ezra, what does he do? He reads the Torah. Ezra is viewed as a gadol, and again, people turn to him for guidance. People turn to him, and when they see him crying and when they see him fasting and mourning, then they say, we need to change. So Ezra is again, he tries to change, but he doesn't have the same perhaps political force that Nehemiah does in being able to institute change. I think you can make the argument that during their respective lifetimes, Nehemiah may have been seen as the more prominent leader. But Ezra's impact, I believe, had a more long-term effect. He spread Torah to the masses. He made Judaism part of a Jew's daily life, primarily through Midrash Halacha. And because he felt so strongly about teaching Torah as a part of a Jew's life and how our lives are inseparable from Torah, then a few hundred years later, when the Jews were faced with the choice between give up your religion or give up your life, in the story of Hanukkah, many, many Jews were willing to give up their life rather than to give up their religion, probably because of Ezra's efforts to instill how critical it is that a Jew is not a Jew unless he observes Torah, and how critical observance of Torah is to living a life as a Jew.